Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. And joining me in studio right now is Kathleen Johnson, who is the chaplain for Aspires at Home. Also, Stephanie Lebo is the hospice manager. So we're going to be talking about hospice during this segment. First of all, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
No problem. Now, hospice, who could give me just a general overview of what hospice is and why somebody should consider it?
Well, hospice is a program for people that are basically terminally ill or have a prognosis that's saying that their life's going to be over within 6 months, which is not always true. We've had people on hospice for over 2 or 3 years. But it does help you get ready for end-of-life care, what you're going to do at the end of life, and hospice makes quality of life.
Well, what's the difference between hospice care and staying in the hospital or in some sort of facility?
Hospice care can be done at your home, in a facility, or we see a lot of hospice patients at the Omega House up here in Houghton. But we have nurses, social workers, chaplains, nurses' aides that can go into your home. We want to keep people at home as long as possible.
Kathleen, what is the role of a chaplain in hospice care?
Well, the role of the chaplain is, of course, emotional care and care of the person's spiritual needs, not only of the person, but of the family as well.
Somebody didn't know yet you're in an interview.
Obviously.
All right. So when is when is that decision made whether or not to go with hospice care or to stay in, you know, a facility or hospital?
Well, I think the thing that you forget here is a lot of people don't realize is how to get into hospice. What's the trigger? And as the little article that we just wrote for the Gazette here says, that the person has to have a diagnosis, obviously, of terminality. And it's the doctor, his or her doctor, that can trigger the appointment to hospice, the referral to hospice. And this is what a lot of people do not understand and know. And again, the whole concept of hospice, I think, is very difficult for a lot of people because when they hear that terminal, it kind of stops their brain and they get either angry or they get upset or that's all they can think of. But hospice is a care, total care package for the person, for the family, and ultimately the community.
I have some experience with this in that my father, when he passed away 3 years ago, he was in hospice care. He died of lung cancer, and so he was able to spend the remainder of his days at home with my mother there helping to care for him, and the nurse would come to the house every day and administer whatever medicine that he needed to have. But it meant that it took several months for him to pass, and it meant that my mother didn't have to spend all of that time at the hospital with the family if they wanted to come visit. My dad had an opportunity to have each of his sons come and visit him with, and we all lived in different areas.
It's about life. It's about living, not death, but it's about living, yes.
Yeah, and he was able to do that without having everybody go to the hospital and spend time at the hospital. So I have to imagine that was more comfortable for everybody involved. The decision that is made, is it primarily made by the person in care or those that are taking care of someone?
I would say both. I think when, let's take cancer, if someone has cancer and they've been going through treatment for, say 6 months, a year, and they're tired of fighting, nothing's working. They don't want any more treatment. They just want to go home. They want to be with their family and live their life out.
Do people sometimes make the decision that they're open to hospice care before, like when people plan for end-of-life care? Does that come into play?
You mean like the, what is it, those things that they write out, those certificates?
The DPOAs?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, most people have a DPOA, like if something happened to a patient and they couldn't make their own medical decisions and somebody else would. But I think most people just are tired of fighting. I mean, they're going to the doctors every day. They're going for treatments every other day. They're getting poked. They're tired of it. They want to just be at home, enjoy their family, and hopefully not be sick for the, you know, for the remainder.
Let's talk about just how hospice works a little bit more in detail for people to understand it, because I think a lot of people, if you haven't experienced it, you know, like right, I have right. or others, you don't really know what it is. And Kathleen, you kind of said something a moment ago. You know, I think people generally think hospice is, when you hear the word hospice, it means go home to die.
Right.
And you said, no, that's not really the right approach to it.
No. It's about quality of life is really what hospice is about, that you can live to your final days, not exactly enjoying life, I guess, but to participating within the life of your family, of your friends, whatever. And it's unfortunately, the big problem I see with hospice is the most people today do not understand dying to begin with. The death thing in our society is something that they would like to avoid, period. And so hospice, when they hear hospice, they immediately think, oh dear, I'm terminal. It's over for me. It's not about that. It's about the extension of life. And it's a team effort that takes the individual. And it's doctors, it's nurses, it's the chaplain, it's the social worker. This is a team effort and supports that person in their home, in their nursing home, in their nursing facility, assisted living, wherever. And then they are taken care of right to the very last breath. And it's more of a celebration of life rather than a termination of life. And that's why I'm very, very pro-hospice, because I think our society right now is, we have several states that have assisted suicide. And this is something that some people just want to avoid death completely. Death is part of life, and a lot of people just reject that today. And it's not the way it should be, in my opinion, of course, but anyway.
And we have when a baby's born, we have a plan for life. So at the end of life, we should plan for the end of
right.
our life.
Right.
Make sure we see everybody we want to see and call people. Maybe you haven't talked to a family member in years and you need to see them or you need to talk to them.
When you talked about that it's the end of life and it's when you reach the point that you're deciding to go with hospice, does that mean at that point you've given up on possibly getting better or possibly treatment? Have you decided that the days are numbered?
You basically decided that you want to opt out of treatment. That you don't want, you're tired of going to the doctors, you're tired of going for treatment, you don't want to go to the ER anymore. And the nurse can help, you know, manage your symptoms at home.
When working with families who have to make that decision, whether it's the person themselves who is being treatment or a family that's caring for them, that's got to be a hard moment that decision itself.
It is very hard.
How do you help them through it?
Emotional support. Our social worker, Kathy, our chaplain.
Yeah, right.
They're good support systems. We do a lot of education. Our nurses' aides go there and everyone gives a lot of emotional support to the family and the patient.
Is there any stresses or issues that are raised for somebody holding on for too long when hospice care would have been the best choice?
I see it often. The average time for a person to be in hospice, I think, is what, 18 days?
Yeah.
18 days. And it's the usual time is about 6 months. But so often we see people that come into hospice, they're there for 24 hours. That's not what hospice is about. Hospice is a planned continuum of their life, really. It's not something, well, everything else has failed, now let's put you in hospice. We see that frequently.
It's hard to manage symptoms at that point as well. Someone's, you know, passing and they're in a lot of pain and they pass within 24 hours. While we did what we could, but you know, it'd be easier if we could manage their symptoms for a longer period of time, weeks to months.
Yeah, and give them life, you know, give them some quality of life. I tell you a good story.
Good. We like these kind of stories.
I had one gentleman several years ago, and he had kidney problems, and he was on dialysis. So I went to see him one day, and he says, "That's it." He says, "I'm finished with kidney dialysis. I don't want to be on kidney dialysis." Well, he lived, which is unusual, 6 months after the kidney machine business. So anyway, I went and visited him at Omega House one day, and he says, "You know," he says, I said my prayers. I told God I'm ready." And he says, "Here I am." He was very upset that he was still alive. We had a lady not too long ago who was taken out of hospice because she was getting better, of all things. People do get better. And she's in the bed crying that she's not in hospice anymore. I mean, there are, you know, situations like that that do arise. And we do get people that get better in hospice and go home and live several years afterwards.
All right, well, let's talk. Okay, where does hospice take place? Because I think of it mostly as care in the home.
Go ahead,
Steph. Hospice can be in home, or if you live in a nursing facility, we can do hospice in a nursing facility. Basically, it gives the facility extra hands. They're busy. So it's always good to have hospice in a facility if needed. The Omega House, they have a hospice home there. And also, like Garden View, assisted living. Medical care. The Lighthouses of Hubble and Hancock.
Or your own home. It hospice has no place. It's not a place. It's an idea. It's a concept. And that's the difference. So it can take place anywhere.
I guess I would also envision, and I know I'm wrong in this, is why I'm asking, but that hospice care is usually for an older person, an elderly person who is, you know, nearing the end of their days, and you know they choose hospice care. But you have to probably have any age limit, really, or any age this could be applied to if somebody's terminally ill.
Yeah, it doesn't, you know, death when people are sick. We've had
very young people. I remember once at Omega House was a young boy about 21 years old, and it was very difficult from the chaplain point of view to help him because he was very angry at that point. You know, why had God let him suffer like this? He had cancer, and so on and so forth. But it can be young children. We've had young children too.
Yeah, you can go into hospice at any age. We've had babies, we have teenagers.
Yeah.
We've had middle-aged people.
It is unusual. The majority of our people here are over 65 or elderly.
My wife's spent her career as a school teacher, and talking about this reminded me of she had a 4-year-old with cancer who had actually beat cancer once and then it came back. And the story is, you know, that she was being cared for by her dad at home. So that had to have been a hospice care situation now that I'm thinking about it, because, you know, there had been a decision to bring her home and let her spend the rest of her time, you know, with her toys and in her own room. And she was, you know, 4 years old. And when she passed away, and she passed away at home with her dad there. So, yeah, I can see the value in that as well, if you're very young as opposed to being older and needing a care situation like this. Stephanie, the nurses who work with hospice, they have to have a different mindset, you know, when they're performing this type of care as opposed to, you know, working in a regular hospital or emergency room, because you can't just show up and give people shots. You have to administer a lot more.
It takes a special person, a special nurse, to care for these hospice patients. It's very emotional. You have to be ready to go into this home and try not to break down yourself, because you're supposed to be the supporter. You're the caregiver almost. You want to be there for the caregiver, for the patient. Some people can't do it. It really takes a special person to care for hospice patients.
How do you avoid getting, you know, attached and close to somebody if you're caring for them, and especially if you're caring them for them for a long period of time? At some point, it's going to be like losing a close friend or a family member.
It is, and that's why we do have social workers that help with bereavement. And I think when we lose a patient, and there are ones that are very close to us, we need to be able to grieve ourselves. Because you can't keep moving on. You might have five of your patients die that week. We don't want that. I mean, you know, we need to be able to grieve about that.
Do you find that, Kathleen, when you're...
Yes, it is. It's very difficult as a chaplain because you do... One of the things that I see is that as a human person, we are all connected. And it's a privilege to be there when a person passes. And so the... All I can tell you is I have walked into nursing homes with somebody that you've been visiting and talking to for 2 years, and the person's gone, completely gone. There isn't even a tissue paper there. And the pain inside of that emotional relationship, you don't realize it's even there until it's gone, until that person is gone. So there is a great toll. And one of the problems for a lot of chaplains who deal with this sort of thing is that emotional burnout. It does happen. And it is strange because some people connect with you so completely and others do not. So it's not an even thing. It's kind of like a surprise almost, and getting to know these people and to being with them on their journey. It is a privilege.
We've talked a lot about what this means to the person receiving the care and for those that are administering the care. A group of people that I would think that benefit from this is the family.
Yes.
Whether it's a spouse or, you know, whether it's sisters, neighbors as well, who, you know, that hospice care is not just about caring for the person who's terminally ill. It is caring for everybody involved. And I can see how exactly they can benefit from that too. How so?
Oh, I just think, again, I think one of the big problems with the family and the dying person is that you feel so helpless. You feel like, you know, one, you don't want to see them suffer anymore, and the other part of you wants to keep them. And so there's this dynamic going on, and it's very difficult. So if you have people around you, hospice, social workers, other people, it kind of holds you dear while you're going through this process. And grieving is a process. It's a process that you have to actually live through. And it doesn't start at the moment of death. It can be before as well, that you're going to lose your mother or you're going to lose your father. So these emotional dynamics are sometimes very difficult for families. And you see that, I'm sure.
Yes, and along with grieving, the patient grieves a lot of the time.
Right.
The patient may be angry and upset, and the caregiver's wondering, or the spouse, why is he or she so mad at me? But they're grieving as well. So our social workers, nurses, chaplains are able to come in, and the caregivers can take a step back, you know, and just kind of just be with their family, and we can support them.
Those stages of grief.
We also have volunteers, by the way, a volunteer program that's very active, and they also visit the individuals on a regular basis. So this is something, and this is given by the community. These people are not paid. They come in as fellow citizens and fellow community members that want to help a family. And this is something I think in our world is a real plus.
Well, I can certainly see the benefits of receiving hospice care, but I have to think that one of the first questions people have is, well, how do I pay for something like this? Is it covered by insurance?
Hospice is a Medicare certified benefit. So if you are at home and you have Medicare, you would not pay anything. You know, your Medicare, you basically are opting out of your regular Medicare, and you're going to come into the hospice benefit, which Medicare will cover. So nothing will come out of your pocket. But then if you live in a facility and you have Medicare, but say your private pay, you would still privately pay your room and board, but the Medicare benefit would still cover the hospice, so there wouldn't be anything extra. But some patients have Medicaid in the, say, in a nursing facility, so the Medicaid would pay for the room and board, and we would just pay for our hospice. The Medicare would pay for the hospice services. We do cover some supplies, you know, related to symptom management or to keep someone comfortable, as well as medications related to their diagnosis, prognosis, pain management, bowel management. So there is a lot of
Hospital beds and oxygen. A lot of facility, you know, actual things, oxygen, right? Yeah, a lot
different
of those things
that you would,
They're covered.
Okay. Even if you have private medical insurance? And
most insurances cover hospice.
Yeah, it would seem to be beneficial to them.
I mean,
constant care in a hospital would be more expensive than hospice care. So from an insurance company's point of view, you can see them sort of getting on board with that. If you don't have insurance, though, I know it's more rare these days to not have it, but you know, if you are paying out of pocket, is it possible to do that?
Honestly, we've never had anyone pay out of pocket, but we have our social workers would be great to help start the process for insurance if a patient did not have insurance.
Okay, great. If people have questions and they want to know more, and we can only have so much time here to talk about it, what are ways that they can educate themselves about hospice care?
You could always call me at Aspires at Home, and I am always willing to give more information. Our social workers are willing to go to people's homes and do informational visits. We have a website.
You can also, there are national organizations as well that support hospice, national hospice associations, and they're on the web. It's not very difficult to find them.
And Kathleen, you mentioned earlier that you have a series of articles that are appearing in the Daily Minding Gazette. Can you tell me about what those topics are?
Well, the first one that I find is the one that is amazing. Most people do not know what hospice is. As I said, they connect it with terminality or the end of life, and that's it. That's as far as they go, unless they've had experience, their father, their mother, a friend has died in hospice. Then they understand what hospice is. So I wrote those to just alert people that there are choices out there. And one of the choices I find, especially since as our dynamic, as our population is growing older, that there is a place for us to consider at the end of life. We're all going to die. We're all going to be, we're all terminal, period. But we have choices, and hospice is one. So the first article dealt with what is hospice. And second one is, I believe, on how to get into hospice, and that's through your doctor. And the last one is what's covered by hospice, I believe. So these are just simple answers. And again, if they want to know more, we certainly are more than happy to relay information, or they can go out on the web and find it without ever, you know, getting a local answer.
You find that most people that you talk to, when they don't understand hospice so much, and it's presented as, you know, a possible an option for them, that in general they're pleased that they took that option. Then,
well, we give surveys to every family, correct?
Yes, we do.
Yes, and we're what about 98% are very approving of hospice, of that benefit that their family has received. We have a very high rating in that. Because why? Because it's a point where people really need some help in dealing with the emotions and the hospitals and the physicality of the illnesses and so on and so forth. And respite as well. We have people that will come in and give the caregiver a few hours to go and shopping or something. Sometimes that the poor caregiver, you know, is kind of tied into the whole, and that's a very emotional thing to
to be a caregiver. We haven't even covered that, but that's part of hospice too. So it's complicated, but it's also a great benefit.
Yeah, we've seen workshops pop up, you know, around here that teach respite care as well as hospice care for caregivers. So people, if they want to know more, they'll learn. Check those out. Also, I have a note here that for more information about hospice care services, you can contact Aspires at Home at 337-5700. You can also visit them online at aspires.org/hospice. And you can also probably go and find this at the Aspires website, too. Probably a link there, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the program and talking about this. You answered a lot of my questions, and I hope we also answer the questions of the listeners.
Thank you very much.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.